Okay, everyone, let's be honest here. Whether you are living abroad or at home, having a financial plan is vital to charting your financial future. I know that some of us really don't like talking about money because it can be overwhelming, which is why you may want to consider speaking with the professionals at Smith Brewer Advisors. From retirement to investment management and estate and tax planning, an experienced financial advisor at Smith Brewer Advisors will help you create a plan to meet your financial goals. And what's awesome? They empower their clients to make the right decisions for their individual situation. To learn more about working with a fiduciary financial advisor, visit smithbreweradvisors.com. Proud sponsors of the Global Chatter podcast. Smith Brewer Advisors LLC is a registered investment advisor with the Securities and Exchange Commission. I will say that I knew very little about the stories and experiences of overseas athletes until fairly recently. If you listen to the show a couple episodes back, you'll know that I did an interview with Jory Davis, who shared her story of becoming a professional basketball player overseas. Honestly, it was an eye-opener for me, because I will readily admit, I didn't even know how one even got started. But one thing that I can say is her episode highlighted just how much it takes for an athlete to move abroad just so that they can continue playing in the sport that they love at the highest levels. The patience, the trials, the steadfastness, it's all in the mix. And those components that were prominent in Jory's story are the same in Chris Squires. Just like Jory, Chris is a former athlete from Indiana University who, in his case, played baseball. After spending time in the minor and independent leagues, a chance opportunity led to him relocating to Austria at the edge of the Eastern Alps, where he is currently based today. It's also where Chris is expanding the platform he founded, Love It Lifestyle, which is both a contemporary fashion blog and brand. In this episode, Chris walks us through the journey he's been through in order to build both his baseball career and his growing fashion one. He describes the perseverance of pursuing both pathways and how living in Austria has given him the opportunity to stay tethered to both. He also underscores the importance of having a plan for what comes next when life can change at any minute. Life is rarely a straight path, but as you'll soon hear, it doesn't mean you can't get to where you're intending to go. Welcome to the Global Chatter.
I always like to do a location check because when you do this kind of show, very rarely am I in the same place with them. So where in the world are you?
I'm in Dornbirn, Austria. It's the west side of Austria. I'm about 10 minutes from the Swiss border and about 20 minutes from the German border.
Okay, so the part that kind of freaked me out earlier was when you said it was snowing. We're recording this in, I guess it's the first day of April. So the fact we know I'm in the south, but is it common for it to be snowing around this time where you are?
Yeah, they have a saying. I don't know exactly what it is in German, but April tends to do whatever it wants. And all of March was nice. So it's a little bit unexpected for us.
Yeah.
Everybody was getting ready for spring. And then this weekend's supposed to be really cold. So hopefully things change soon.
And I would imagine, because I've been in these streets long enough, that when you say you're in Austria, somebody got to say you in Australia.
Yes, exactly. Kangaroos is the thing most people ask about.
Do they really? Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's like, hey, how are the kangaroos? I'm like, wrong place.
I don't even want to ask if they're American because I already know I'm going to be embarrassed. But but I'm sure other people, hint, hint, who are not American might assume you're not. Did you, and with it being Austria, and I'm thinking about where you're located. So I'm trying to think from a language standpoint. German, is that part of
yes.
the? Okay.
Yes, German. They have their own little dialect here specifically, which makes it incredibly tough to learn.
Yeah.
But everywhere in this area, up to the Swiss border, a little bit of Switzerland, and a little bit of, once you go over into Germany, it's all kind of the same. But as soon as you get, 50 kilometers outside of here, it's completely different. In either direction, it's completely different.
Oh my gosh. Well, here's the thing. We're going to talk about your story and we're going to talk about how you got to Austria, because I'm sure there are people going, okay, let's be honest, I don't know any black people in Austria is probably what they're thinking.
100%.
And so, but I want to kind of lay out your story so we can talk about where you are and what you're doing right now.
Okay.
So you grew up in the Midwest. Is that correct?
Yes. Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Oh my goodness. Born and raised?
Not born. I was born in New Jersey. My parents moved around for a little bit and then we settled on Fort Wayne. And I think I maybe was about 3 years old or so by the time we got there. And so I was raised up there, but I wasn't born there. Okay. All of my memories pretty much come from Fort Wayne, though.
From Fort Wayne, Indiana. Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit about your childhood. Did you grow up traveling at all?
I would say traveling in the sense that we would go on, you know, vacation, spring break. So we'd go to Florida or Arizona and places like that. Cancun one time. That was the first time I really was out. Mm-hmm. So we did quite a lot of traveling within the United States, Canada every now and then. I took a few baseball trips up to Canada when I was in about high school. Mm-hmm. So was kind of, we grew up traveling. So we knew what it was to travel and to move around and see different places.
Yeah. I mean, I've said this pretty frequently, particularly with Americans, just because as big as the country is, right? Like, I mean, I'm sure growing up in Fort Wayne is very different than going to like a Florida, right?
Oh, 100%. Right? Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Did you see, and I guess even within where you're growing up or the places you traveled in within the U.S., did you kind of notice different cultural expressions or just, you know, different ways of doing things from what you were familiar with?
Yeah, 100%. I think part of that, though, stems from my father's from New York City and my mother's from Columbus, Ohio. Mm-hmm. So just outside of traveling back and forth to Columbus, I mean, still Midwest, but a lot more progressive, at least at this point in time, than where I come from. And of course, New York is kind of a shock the first couple of times that you go. Yeah. So as a young kid, it was always, you know, great for my brother and I to get to New York and see these different surroundings. So we'd kind of grown up knowing life in Fort Wayne isn't like life everywhere else within this country, even.
And I think that might be a great foreshadowing to kind of where your life has taken you,
exactly,
right?
Exactly.
No, but it's true. Like New York, though, really is like nowhere else in the country. Like as an American, I go there and go, okay, this is part of the U.S., but but this is very different. And so at what point did you, you know, you've already mentioned baseball. What point did you start playing or did you pick up an interest in the sport?
I was very, very young. So probably about 3 years old. And about that time, I mean, that was my first love. Once I was like, I love this and this is what I want to do. Mm-hmm. That is the only thing that my mind was on. So even in school, you know, you take art class or career planning and all these things. I would try to plan everything around wanting to be a baseball player. All of my art would have something to do with baseball. I know my art teacher hated me for that growing up, but that's just the way that my mind was working at that time. It was, this is the thing that I want to do. And I'm going to put all of my time and effort into trying to accomplish that.
Now, from your family standpoint, did you grow up in an athletic family or was this just sort of like you were the outlier who had this sport and this talent?
No, I grew up in an athletic family. I think my mom played basketball in high school and played a little bit of maybe rec league softball. My dad did a lot more, though. I think he, especially growing up in New York, he played lacrosse. He played basketball. They were always going to the park and doing whatever they were doing out there athletically. I think he also wrestled in college.
Oh, wow.
So we grew up in a sports family and we played all sports. I mean, they introduced us to every sport and whatever we took a liking to. They decided, all right, well, we'll let you do this or we'll let you try this out and see how you like it.
So I would imagine as a young kid with this background in the sport, you did get to travel because of that sport, right?
Yeah, 100%. Even still relating to my dad, my dad's very into martial arts. So from a very young age, you know, he might go to a tournament. We would travel with him to go to that tournament. And then Once it turned into, or once we started playing baseball, and I say we, cause my brother and I both played baseball. Once we started playing on different travel teams, we'd at least travel around the area or a little bit outside. So, you know, Michigan, Illinois, Ohio, those places that were very close to us. We started traveling there, you know, on weekends for tournaments during the summer. And that's really where, if you're going to do something and you have to travel to do it, you just get right into it.
Yeah. You talked about this as being as a young kid and knowing, you know, you try to plan things around baseball. Mm-hmm. Did you, I guess, with all seriousness, have an awareness that, you know, thinking about high school, thinking about college, thinking about post-college, mm-hmm. it would have something to do with baseball? Was that kind of where your mind was, that this is the sport that I really want to go all in?
100%. I know, especially by the time I got to high school, we did our recruiting a little bit differently. I just decided that, you know, these are the colleges that I want to go to. Let's go to their camps, show them what I can do, tell them that I'm interested in their school. And of course, I wanted to go to a school that was also great academically. So with Notre Dame being around me and Michigan, you know, we would go to these places, say, hey, this is what I want to do. This is how I'm kind of building my life. And I also want the opportunity to play professionally.
Yeah.
So we just made a list of all the schools that would give me, or I'd have a great time academically. I'd be able to develop as a baseball player and continue on my career the way that I wanted. I knew I wanted to start a business at some point in time. Both of my parents are entrepreneurs. And so the way that I really looked at life at that point in time was, you know, I want to play baseball. Okay, what's your plan B? Okay, go to a good school, get a great education in business.
Yeah.
And then when baseball is done, okay, I at least have the skills to be inserted into any role that I want to at any company, or I can start my own company. Don't know what it is yet, or at that time, I didn't know exactly what it was, but I just wanted to arm myself with that knowledge and those skills where that was my plan B, and I'd be able to execute that as I saw fit.
Okay. Can I say that the educator in me is so happy that you said all of that? Because I said this to Jory, and I will say this to you, because both of you are athletes and have been athletes. Mm-hmm. You know, specifically in the space that I worked in for a long time, which I was telling you was with Black and Brown kids. Mm-hmm. And when you're helping students think about college and they potentially have an athletic ability, right? Mm-hmm. Or perceive, because that's the other thing. I will just say.
Exactly.
So often I would have this conversation about what is your plan, you know, with your sport or without it?
Yes.
And now I recognize, you know, Joy with basketball, you with baseball, a little bit different, still the same though, mm-hmm. where, you know, particularly I'm dealing with students who are looking at football, you know, mm-hmm. if we're looking at male students.
Yeah, 100%.
And it was just this, I think you know where I'm going. It's immediately, okay, I'm going to get to insert whatever D1, you know, and I'm a D1 kid. I'm, you know, ACC mm-hmm. country, not Big Ten, but you know, it's okay. All be ACC, but do you know what I mean?
That hurts me.
I know. It's supposed to. You know, the funny thing is, complete sidebar. I have visited some of those schools out there, and they are I've been out to Michigan, for example. Mm-hmm. Wonderful campus. I mean, there is good or bad, a wonderful sports culture that is very embracing out there, and I can definitely see why, especially if you're a kid from there. Mm-hmm. Those are the schools you're going to aspire to go to. Not that there aren't great other schools, but you know, but if you want to be at some of these powerhouses, I think they're great education wise. But it was funny, the number of kids I would talk to, and especially, to be very honest, mostly Black males. Mm-hmm. And there's this idea of, okay, I'm just going to play the sport, right? Like, I'm good enough to play the sport, and then I'm going to be the next. I mean, I can date myself, but it could be anybody. It could be, well, no, that'd be too far back. But like Mike Vick, Reggie Bush, whatever, whomever, right? Just because you know who they are. Some people are like, who are they?
Yeah.
But the thing that was very disheartening sometimes is that I'd have to say, number one, it's very competitive, right? It is competitive to be, I would imagine, you know, you have a list, but it is competitive if it is a especially well-known program in that 100%. Discipline. And it is also just competitive from the standpoint of even once you get past that, if you're looking at the higher levels. And so I'm curious with that list, you made a very curated college list in terms of where you were going to go. Is that correct?
Yeah, very much so. We had about, I'm going to say maybe five schools that I knew were great at baseball, would give me a great education, and I'd be able to kind of do what I wanted to after that. So I know Stanford was the school I loved growing up because they always were in the College World Series.
Yeah.
The coach at Vanderbilt now, Tim Corbin, actually played baseball with my god uncle.
Yeah.
And they played at Ohio Wesleyan together. So Vanderbilt was definitely of interest. Of course, the Ivy Leagues in the Northeast. I have family that lives in the Northeast. Yeah. So those were schools that were also, you know, in consideration. And we just sat down and plotted out, you know, where I should back up a little bit. You know, the way that my brother and I grew up was, you know, my parents always told us, if you have a great education, you can always do what you want to do. And so it was really not so much that it was always education first.
Yeah.
But there was if our grades were not right, then we could not play. Mm. And so there was this strong emphasis on education needs to be at the forefront of what you want to do outside of sport. And so that is just the funnel that we decided to look at our sports careers within was, okay, what are these schools that can offer me both of the things that are going to help me move forward in life in the way that I want to. And so that's what we sat down, came up with as a family. And then we set out on a path to try to do that and make it happen.
So where did you ultimately end up going for college?
I ended up going to Indiana. I ended up being a direct admit into the business school, which always helps. I wanted to study
and make life
business
a little bit easier for everyone.
Yeah, exactly. And it was, the funny thing was, it was actually the last school I wanted to go to because they didn't have a great baseball program at the time. Hmm. Now, I believe in God. I hope some of the other people that listen believe in God as well. And, you know, it really was, God really created this situation that was really optimal for me because I didn't want to go to Indiana because the baseball was bad. Well, the coach had just transferred from Miami of Ohio, mm-hmm. Which had a winning program. And, you know, he wanted me to be in his first class of guys to try to turn this ship around, which he ended up doing. He coaches at Arizona State now. So he was very successful in achieving what he wanted to at Indiana. And because I had already gotten into the business school, and so I was like, okay, I can study business. This guy really wants me to be a part of his program because especially for athletics, you want to go somewhere where, one, you're going to play, mm-hmm. and two, you know, the coach actually has a vested interest in you. And late in my recruiting is when that opportunity really came about. And, you know, I couldn't thank God more for how everything ended up shaking out.
And I want to put, at that point, I want to put a pause on, we've gotten you to college, but I want to put a pause on that because I believe this is the best way I can describe it. There's a parallel story because you have talked mm-hmm. about business, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think it's important for our audience to understand, okay, why is he like swirling around business? And that, obviously you mentioned your parents were entrepreneurs, mm-hmm. right? Was that... Yes. You know, was that a motivating factor just in general? And we will talk about the line of business you're in, but was that something where you always saw yourself as, I probably am going to be an entrepreneur or have my own thing?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, considering that's one, how I grew up, you know, I saw my mom write a business plan from scratch.
Wow.
You know, and get funding and investing. She's in home healthcare. Yeah. Her business has been around 25 years plus. Wow. And so just seeing as an entrepreneur, the freedom of your lifestyle that comes with owning your own business as well. I knew that was the direction that I wanted to go. So I didn't watch my parents do the typical, you know, 9-to-5 corporate route. It was, you know, we built this from scratch and now this is thriving. And then my dad's a software engineer and he actually was going to Indianapolis for a while, had some clients down there building his business. And for me, at least, I was just like, this is great. I mean, my parents come to pretty much every one of my baseball games. It's always a parent there, or one's with me, one's with my brother.
Yeah.
And so we just saw how that lifestyle of having your own business, being able to do what you want to do when you want to do it, that freedom that owning something yourself or that comes with owning something yourself, that was something that I knew, you know, as I told you before, I didn't know what type of business I necessarily wanted to go into. I just knew I just want to learn about business and I'll figure out between baseball and all my other interests, you know, do what you do and money comes. And I still try to live a little bit by that mantra, and because I'm still not there yet, but that's the way that we grew up. And that's the way that I still continue to see life.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's really wild. When I hear you speak, I'm thinking to myself, in some ways, it sounds unconventional, but in other ways, I'm thinking to myself, well, you know what? He had parents who were entrepreneurs, and he has this talent. That person's probably not going to go into a 9-to-5. to be honest, I don't think you were set up for a 9-to-5 typical experience. Would you agree?
Oh, wholeheartedly agree. Yeah.
So you know, I was when I was doing research for this, I was very intrigued because I think you had mentioned on the Unguarded podcast about where your interest in fashion started, and part of it started, I think, with your family, but then just how you built that. And so, can you talk a little bit about, especially from a young age, where you start to be very cognizant about fashion? Because I'm especially interested about this, thinking about you as a young male, because the teenage boys I knew did not care.
Exactly.
I mean, not to the extent that you cared. Like, they cared about, okay, maybe these Jordans or whatever, but not.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so my grandmother and my great aunt actually had their own little boutique in Manhattan. It was called House of Squires. And what they would do is they would go out to the shops. You know, they had their clients. They would buy things they thought their clients liked. And then they'd have these little, you know, parties at their house, and people would try things on and everything. And so I never got to fully see exactly what they did. But when we would go to New York, I remember, you know, us going into the basement and they have all these racks of clothes and we're like, okay, what's going on here? You know, so my dad had always mentioned, you know, that kind of was their thing. And, you know, when we go out of the house, you know, they were very big on, we will always be put together. You know, no matter what the style is or the trend, there's some classic ways or some timeless ways. You can always put yourself together. So we started learning that stuff as we were growing up. And of course, I mean, especially in high school, you're going to try to fit in with the crowd a little bit. But I think, and I think I mentioned this with Jory as well, is once I went from public school to private school, where private school, we had a uniform.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of where my sense of style really came together, which was, okay, here's, you know, all this urban wear that we're wearing really in public school. Now, how do I still keep my personality in also wearing this uniform over here? Yeah. And then that really was the start of a journey that I had no clue it would end up, you know, where it's at today. But that really was the start of the journey, because I knew I thought about it a little bit differently than just, oh, let me just throw this on and throw this on. It needs to look well. It needs to match. I'm not so much with matching now. I like to compliment a little bit more.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a way or a process to put an outfit together and put clothing together that looks good and presentable and still keeps a little bit of personality in there. And everything is just really grown from that seed.
And I have to imagine, and I'm not trying to be, what's the word? Stereotypical. I mean, you're in the Midwest, right? We know, I mean, at this point, we know that when we look at fashion epicenters in the country, we are looking coastal, right? Good or bad, we see the ones that we look coastal. And so I'm trying to imagine being, you know, a young person, particularly a teenage male, particularly being a Black teenage male, and having maybe a little bit of a different sense of fashion expertise and knowledge than maybe your peers who, you know, because we're all trying to fit in, right? 100%. So that's not the time, we're trying to go the other way. Did you get in a little bit of pushback or any kind of just, I don't want to say resistance because you're just being you, but were there folks where they were just like, yeah, man, I don't know about all this.
I wouldn't say too much. Granted, it really took a while for everything to kind of come to fruition. But what I can comment on that is I think we had talked about traveling with baseball earlier. And, you know, going to, when I went to Canada, I was with a team from Chicago. So it was a little bit different than, you know, what people were doing in Fort Wayne. And when I went out to Stanford's camp, you know, I met a lot of kids from California and their style was completely different. So I got to see how all these different people dressed and took a little bit from each of what they were doing to say, oh, you know, let me try this and let me try this. And, you know, it also helped me not to be afraid to be myself, because I knew, okay, if I wear, you know, this hat with the super flat brim, all the guys I know from Cali, they're all with this. So it doesn't matter if the people in Fort Wayne are or not. I know my guys out in Cali, we're all with this, you know? So
yeah,
you got to see a little bit of that diversity and at the same time kind of shore up your own uniqueness, because you knew wherever you were, you were just pulling little pieces. So there'd be someone out there that liked some aspect of it, you know, or of the outfit that you created. Yeah. And that's where everything really just started going full throttle.
You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand, and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, so I want to pick up the story. You know, typically, and you are pretty much, I think, in line with this, when someone plays a sport in college, many people have the hopes, or at least the intentions, of at least trying at the professional level. So making, you know, taking it to the next level. So when you were ready to leave college, what was your plan, and where did you end up landing?
Well, the first plan was to get drafted my junior year, which did not happen, because junior year is where you can at least make a little bit of money. I at least knew, because I tried to leave afterwards, because I didn't get drafted, which was very upsetting for me, because I thought that was something that was going to happen. But the feedback I just kept hearing was, you know, we'll get you next year. We'll get you next year. We'll get you next year. So I said, all right, you know, let me settle in for this last year. I know something will happen. And I ended up getting drafted by the Marlins very late. So senior sign, and I got drafted, went down to Jupiter, started playing and just trying to figure out, okay, how do I get better? How can I compete at this level? And, you know, that I started traveling again. That took me out to, I had a pitching coach out in California. Mm-hmm. So I'd go out to California in the off season, throw with him, go back to Florida for the season. And I would drive. I started driving to Florida every year for spring training. I drove out to California when I wanted to do my pitching training. And so I was already trying to figure out, okay, what do I need to try to get better? And then let me bring it down to Florida and see how everything shakes out.
And so at what point did your baseball career kind of take you outside the United States?
When I was a baseball player, or when I played professionally, I kind of was a journeyman. So with all the minor league teams that different affiliates have, I was the guy that was like, okay, spend 2 weeks here and then go 1 week to this other place and then go 2 weeks to this other place and then 3 weeks to this other place. So I was already kind of moving around all the time. Once I got to independent ball, it was the same. You're traveling all over the country. I mean, in the American Association, you go all the way from Winnipeg, Canada to Laredo, Texas, right on the border of Mexico. Wow. So after I'd got released from the Marlins, that's what I was doing. I was still kind of in that travel mode. And then I ended up getting injured and I spent a whole year just working with my mom in home health care. And I just really didn't like sitting in one spot. So when it became time to look for a quote unquote real job, I was rehabbing. I didn't know if I'd be able to play again or not. And I started sending out at this. Now they have a baseball jobs overseas, which helps a lot of guys get over here to find jobs to play here, which is great. They didn't have that when I was there. So I was going to random league websites and just trying to email people like, hey, I'd love to play overseas. I didn't feel that I was done playing yet. Yeah. And so I wanted to, or at that point in time in my career, I said, okay, I'm probably not going back to affiliated ball, but I still want to play. So let me see if I can even find an opportunity to go overseas, because independent ball is a grind. And then it just so happened, Lord intervenes again. It's actually watching our church broadcast on YouTube, and I was at home watching YouTube broadcast. Email came through. I was already feeling bad because, you know, I had to look for real jobs, and email comes through, baseball in Austria. I'm like, oh, what is this? I look it up. Guy asks, you know, hey, I, you know, found some of your information that I had probably put out like a year before or a year and a half before. So I thought it wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
And he said he had stumbled upon it and asked if I wanted the opportunity. And I went through a couple of interviews, and 4 months later, I was done with rehab and I flew out to Austria and started playing out here.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. So for your career, as far as being an overseas athlete, has it been predominantly or only in Austria?
For me, yes. But that's just kind of the way the club that's here kind of structured everything. So when I first came over here, I just was a player. So I just was a foreign player. And over the years, when the year was over, they said, hey, would you like to do, you know, some more youth training? Would you like to maybe coach one of the youth teams, and we'll help you get a German class so you can improve your German? And says, you know what? I actually like that prospect. So, you know, I'll try that. And then the next year it was, hey, you want to take on more youth teams and we'll get you another class and, you know, you can continue learning and moving up here. And so now it's to the point where I don't even really get paid to play anymore. I just kind of play for fun. And my job is really coaching and helping develop the youth. So what I was doing here really evolved over time. And that was very unexpected.
Right.
I never thought at any point in time in my life I would ever even have the need to try to learn German. So the fact that we are even here today is still, you know, I'm just very grateful that you know, these opportunities have come up and I've been able to take advantage of them when they have.
I mean, did you even think you would see yourself as a coach? Was coaching even on your radar?
Not really. And especially not kids.
And not kids in German.
But I think what ended up happening is those two things kind of came together. So it was learn German. Okay. And I'm coaching kids. So let me try to take the things I'm learning in German. Let me use that with the kids. And then I'm kind of growing in two areas at the same time. I'm learning a different language, which I didn't know that I would do. And I really need to try to become more proficient at it so I can communicate with these kids and help them as best as I possibly can. So it was these two different avenues of self-growth that I actually could throw myself into. It wasn't just learning German as a hobby. It was learning it to actually be able to apply it and to you know, begin coaching kids and communicating with, because that's something I never saw myself doing. So to then be thrown into this thing, okay, now I have all these 10-year-olds and 12-year-olds and 14, 15-year-olds. Okay, how can I communicate with them better? And what do I learn about myself on this process? So it was interesting to kind of see that split, let alone the business is also in between there. So yeah, it just became this life growth type situation that yeah, I wanted to be a part of and really throw myself into.
Okay, so you said something that's super important, and I think it's true. It's one thing to learn a language for a hobby, because I'm actually going through this right now, working on, I guess I'll claim it a third language, but there's a specific purpose to it. And you're right, because there's one thing to learn German and figure out where the bathroom is. It's another thing to actually be teaching and training someone in a technical skill.
Yes.
Where you have to be able to put it in a way, or at least describe it in a way that they can understand. And then I say, then it's a different level as someone who's worked with kids, because you're working with kids. Mm-hmm. So you can't even necessarily throw out certain things because they've only had so many experiences at that age.
Exactly.
So yeah, I mean, it is kind of crazy the fact that, that you came thinking you were going to do one thing and you're doing this other thing. And so, you know, I'm interested, you know, at this point, you're a Black dude from the States, right? Like, mm-hmm. Were you in an organization that was multicultural, diverse, or was it pretty much homogenous and you're the difference in it? Like, what was it from a cultural standpoint for you?
Very homogenous. I'll tell you that for sure. Austria is very interesting in general, especially this specific area that we're in. There's a lot of Turkish people that are here as well. There's the refugee community also, and then there's the Austrians. But with our specific organization, as in Baseball Austria, you can always have foreigners come over, or you have a certain allotment of foreigners that you can have come over. So as far as baseball was concerned, you know, a lot of the kids on the team, not the real young kids, but when I was working more with the men's team and the second team, they're used to having different nationalities and okay, different types of people come over to help them out. And so it felt more, was very much more welcoming than if I were to come over and go straight into a company that's homogenous and just do this job and do this job. They were way more welcoming of, hey, let's bring these foreigners over and they're just going to help us learn baseball. And they were used to that situation. So it made it much more comfortable to step in and hit the ground running.
And so inquiring minds want to know, did you get the German?
Kind
of. No one ever wants to say that they're like it.
Yeah, it's
you're better than when you got there.
Oh, way better. 100% better than when I got here.
Okay.
And I still have a long way to go, I'd say. Their grammar is just way different than what English is. And for people that don't know, in German, you have three articles. There's three ways to say the, and then it affects the other words in the sentence based on what the article of a word is. So that's kind of, those are the intricacies of the language that I'm trying to figure out at this point in time.
At least there are rules, because English really don't have it.
Yeah.
I mean, there are rules, but I'm always sympathetic to people who come from other languages, because at least there's like, oh, this is what we do. And I could not explain why we do what we do for why we do it.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Even teaching English is the same as, well, why is it like this? I'm like, I don't know what to tell you. Yeah, this is just the way you should say it.
And we're Americans, so don't ask us what the Brits do.
Exactly. And they teach a lot of British English in school, which is interesting too. Yeah.
Right. And we're like, I don't know why is it spelled that way? I have no idea. This is how we spell it though. And so, okay. So you're in Austria at this point, and I think it's important for the audience to know you have not given up for your love of fashion and that is still very much a part of the things you're doing. So talk a little bit about your brand. So tell us about your brand and how it kind of grew and started while you've been in Austria.
Okay, so when I first got over here, I was really just playing. And as an overseas athlete, you have tons of downtime. And so after the first year and I came back and I was really focused kind of more on coaching, but I was still playing as well. I said, you know what? What can I do with my downtime except, you know, go to the gym or watch Netflix or something? I was like, you know, this would be a good time to try to start building a brand or trying to figure out what kind of business that I want to run. And mm-hmm. I knew I wanted to do something in fashion. And so what I had come up with the logo and all of that stuff like years prior. And so I said, okay, how can I just apply this? And what's a low cost way that I can do it? And one of those is starting a blog and just trying to build audience. So I started the blog in, I believe, late 2016, early 2017. And, you know, really didn't know what to write about. I was like, all right, I just like fashion. Let me try to do this. And I just kind of dove into, okay, how does this work? How do I build a shop? Oh, I can do affiliate marketing. Okay, how do I incorporate that into what I'm doing with my blog? And then, okay, you know, I want to make clothes at some point in time. I have some ideas. Started diving into, okay, who are suppliers and manufacturers? And I really just had a lot of time to navigate this world of how do I do this and what's the best option for me, given I want a low-cost solution to be able to do this. And at the base level, I'm just going to have this blog, which is really my thoughts on fashion. And with affiliate marketing, you don't need any money to do that. It's okay, I can pump these affiliates and these different styles and this different clothing that I like. And it really started there, blogging-wise. And then once I was able to save some money, then that's when I said, okay, I have enough saved now as to where I can produce one item. You know, how much does it cost me to do one item and a few of them and maybe do some drop shipping? And I just started really floating around those areas and seeing how I could put everything together.
I a few months ago had Audra Gordon. Mm-hmm. Y'all's stories are completely different, but the same. Okay, let me say this. So she is originally from the Caribbean, grew up in New York. Mm-hmm. Similar story in the sense that growing up seeing grandmothers and aunties fashion. Mm-hmm. And she went into finance and investment banking. So she did not even go into the fashion. Long story short, though, she never lost it. Moved to Hong Kong, which is where she is right now. And was also building up a brand. And we talked similar, like I am with you, about what it was like. Because she was on her own building this thing up. And then this is all happening during COVID. So, you know, you get momentum. And then, once in a generation, pandemic hits.
Exactly.
And then what happens? And so I'm curious for you, like, you know, you started with an idea. Or you had the idea, but you put it out in the universe because the idea was there. Mm-hmm. You started with something in 2016, 2017. Mm-hmm. Did the pandemic like have any impact to some of the stuff that you were doing? I know you were trying to build brand identity and whatnot, but did that impact some of the work that you were doing?
Not so much, actually. And you know, I want to be mindful of some of the other situations, you know, that people went through, because I can't imagine, you know, going through that or having the rug kind of pulled out from under you. In my situation, you know, it really just became, you know, okay, we can't meet in person to do practice. Okay, so I started making little videos for the kids, and that's how I was passing the time there. I also started working at the, they have like sports schools overseas, if people don't know that. And I started working at that as a baseball instructor. So I took the time to really write out, you know, my philosophy and my plan for how I wanted to move kids through, you know, my training program at the school. We did a lot of video chats and video lessons, and I was able to share with them, you know, different books that I had been reading. So we really switch more from the physical to the mental, which is, you know, there's a huge degree there. They say baseball is 90% mental and 10% physical. So we were really able to, you know, focus in on what are the mental aspects of the game and how do other big league players think about that? What was my experience? What have you guys experienced? And how do you think you can better yourselves mentally to prepare? And, you know, outside of that, you know, I'm working on Love It at the same time. And, you know, a lot of manufacturers are struggling to, you know, find people that want to make clothes. So for me to even inquire, you know, it was I was welcomed in to, okay, what do you want to do? Because we need something. And at the same time, I was saving a lot of money because there were no restaurants open. So I couldn't go and get a kebab and, you know, all that stuff. Yeah. I like to get my guilty pleasures. So it was a very interesting time as in terms of research and development and how to pivot more, you know, from the mental side, at least baseball wise, or even, you know, taking up meditation and things like that. Then those were things in my personal life that were happening that I could then share with my kids as well, apply to everything that I was really doing at that time. So it was an interesting time, but it was a very productive time for me to really sit down and think strategically about, okay, this is reevaluate. What are my goals? Where do I want to go? And are there any changes that I need to make, especially in terms of messaging? That's been really my biggest problem. How can I change this or manipulate it in a way that's going to work better or be more efficient moving forward?
And I think that leads me to my next question. Mm-hmm. So if someone were to hear about Love It, what would you want them to know about this brand? Like, what would you want them to understand that you do or take away?
I want them to understand the takeaway is I want to encourage and inspire people to design a life that they love, which is essentially what I have been doing. And so it's to really tell people that your dreams are possible. You just have to set the goals. You have to plan. You have to see it and try to bring it to fruition. But it is possible to do it. And you don't need a lot of money to do that. I mean, baseball players, unless you play in the big leagues, you do not make money playing baseball. Mm-hmm. So you have to be very mindful about, you know, where your spending is, how much things cost. And it allows you to really look at the fundamentals of one business. You know, how can you put something together, you know, within a budget and make it work, you know? So that was one of the big things that, you know, I saw kind of coming out of this and just overall where really looking at how in your life, if just love your life, there's a lot of things about life to love. So start looking at the little details about it and figure out how you can love every aspect of your life, from your relationships to your work, to your hobbies. Just go all in, be yourself, be unique. And you have the power to create the life that you love. So do it. Just don't be a slave to what society says that you should do. I know that's a much longer explanation than than I really should give. It should be more simple than that.
It's not the longest I've received. So you're totally
right. I'm still working on it.
I mean, and no, because I know I ask these questions, but it's interesting to build a brand in real time, right? Mm. Because I say this, and I'm very transparent with the Black Expat and some of the stuff I've done. I've had to, you know, in real time, I'm like, yeah, what are we about? What are we trying to do? And especially in the early part of the story, right? Because, you know, what's ironic is that 2 years from now, I could ask you the same question and it may look different because of what you've learned.
Yes, right? Exactly.
And so that's why I understand, no, there's no such thing as too long a response because we're all evolving and pivoting, especially when we're building something. I mean, I went through this site and I was looking at some of the content and I was like, okay, there's definitely a very specific point of view that I think that you are trying to convey. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to think of what are the adjectives that I would use? Cause
yeah,
I
was exactly.
Like, I was like, you know, I was thinking purposeful, clean, a very clear aesthetic. I hope these are right, by the way, because if they're not, you're like,
they're helping me. That's
are they really?
I'm about to start taking notes.
I mean, I'm also a really good business strategist, so we could talk off here. All right. I got people who can help with that, but yeah, I mean, it looks like to me, you are taking a mix of what you've learned, your experiences growing up in Indiana. Mm-hmm. How you sort of see fashion and how you sort of see lifestyle, because I really think that when I look at your brand, it is a lifestyle brand.
Mm-hmm.
right? When we look at the descriptions, right? And what it is doing, it's pulling from all these different pieces of your life, right? So whether you've been an athlete, whether you're a scholar, whether you're an entrepreneur, whether you're someone who's been overseas, whether you're a teacher and a trainer, like, is that, that's what I do actually see that. And I think what's very interesting and why I like having folks like you on is that it's interesting to watch someone build a brand outside of their home country.
Yes.
Because I would imagine it's a little bit different.
Yeah, definitely.
Right? Mm-hmm. Right? And you've had to incorporate kind of what's going on in your real world, if you will, not just in your imagined world. And it's like, yeah, I'm also in a different cultural context and how much that impacts your work.
Yes.
So I guess my question for you, you know, as we kind of round up is, you're very early in where you are with it. Where do you sort of see yourself in the next couple of years? And this is both with your brand with Love It, but also, I mean, you're in Austria. Is this like a home base? You know, I always have to say that. Is this like a home base for you? Or do you see other moves up ahead? Or what do you kind of see kind of down the road for you?
I'll start with the what you left off with. Do I see Austria as a home? I would say not necessarily, but I'm also not against it. I personally, I would say I'm moving more towards, I want financial freedom to be able to then go or do whatever I want. And so the way I describe it to my parents is, you know, they're like, well, where do you want to be in 5 years? I'm like, if I have the money, I can go wherever I want. So if I want to design a collection and live in Barcelona and take in attributes from living in Barcelona and infuse that into clothing, then I can do that. Or if I want to go to Africa and infuse what's going on there and use some fabrics from what's going on there and pump all of that up, then I want to have the ability to be able to do that too. So I really see myself as more of a nomad, and I can't definitively say, you know, or I want to live here or I want to live here. I look at my life as I want to be flexible in being able to go where I want to go, when I want to go there, and be inspired by the things there and still be able to turn that into commerce. So that's kind of how I look at life as a whole that way. As far as the brand is, I think it's really about a couple of things. One is just having more offerings to people, because I think that for me, especially, my advertising budget is really not that high. And especially with Instagram now and algorithm changes and all of that, you know, kind of crap we can talk about.
Let's not talk about those IG changes anyway.
Exactly.
All right, Meta.
It's more, okay, can I get out different items to different people in as many different places as I can, to just have people see it and it to be, you know, a little bit more word of mouth based, which I know is not, you know, as far as an investing standpoint, an investor might not want to hear that, but I really look at it as more grassroots and really trying to hit people's souls and actually make them not necessarily think differently, but to look at life from a different perspective. And I remember my mom had asked me, did I really think a t-shirt could change the world? And I said, I think one with my message can, you know, I think it's a reminder to people to, you know, one, love yourself, love others, and love life. And when people see that, that's what I also want them to think about. So if you can see a garment that I make and that is the type of feeling that it conjures up, then I'm doing my job. Now, how do I just present it in a way that can help this business grow over time? And I think having more offerings, or even I'll say getting a bit more artistic with it and going more into, okay, I'm going to focus on how my life in baseball, how can I put that into clothing, or how can I make that fashionable, or those are the kind of things that I'm looking at now, is where can I take it? What kind of sticks? But how do I just get more offerings out there for people to have and to love? You know, I want people to look and say, I love it, or I love this shirt, you know, and it makes me feel this way. And these are what all these little intricacies on it mean. And this is what the message means. And I know a lot of people just want it to be, I just want a cool shirt. And I'm like, great. So my goal is to sell you a cool shirt that has something behind it. And then once you figure out what's behind it, then you're really going to love it.
Okay, so I love you. I wasn't planning on saying that. But look, here's the deal. There are so many, not so many brands, but there are a couple of brands that come to mind that have mm-hmm. that kind of that vision and yep. purpose. You think about Tom's Shoes. There is, my brain is blanking right now, but there's some folks who do it with socks who also, there's a yep. whole thing about why they're doing the thing with socks
100%.
And also give back to homeless shelters. And so a brand with purpose, I think, especially when we look at Gen Z, mm-hmm. who authenticity and genuineness is a big hallmark of that generation. It's going to be a brand that stands out. And so
I think you're
going to do it.
So as well.
when you get into your space of Zen, I think you're absolutely going to do it in your zone of genius. And so, oh my gosh, Chris, thank you for spending some time with me. I keep saying this morning, I know it's afternoon where you are.
Fine.
So I'm going to say today, because some people listen to this in the middle of the night, be like, it's actually, you know, 10 PM where I'm at. So one thing I do with every guest is to make mm-hmm. sure that they know where to find you. And so we will have all of the social media links and the websites in our show notes. So if you want to know where to get in contact with Chris, as well as learn more about his Love It brand, we got you covered, because it'll also be also, if you can't find it in the show notes, on our website. So, there's more than enough places for folks to find us. Chris, any last words?
Thank you so much for the opportunity. It's been great to come on and share my story. And I always feel, I know you looked at the website, people don't really like to read nowadays. So it's, and I'm more of a talker anyway. So it's nice to be able to get out and kind of share my words with my personality and everything behind them, and not everyone just reading stuff all the time, because I've been a little bit shy there. I'm not the biggest social media nut. So I really thank you for the opportunity to share my story and what I've been through, and hopefully inspire someone else to go out and live their life to the fullest, because that's what, you know, this brand's about. And anybody that's willing to do that, I'm always there for questions and to help them along that path as best I possibly can.
You've just listened to an episode of The Global Chatter, which is hosted by me, Amanda Bates. It is edited by Stephanie Ficchio. Don't forget to subscribe to The Global Chatter on your favorite podcast platform. You can also follow us on Instagram at The Global Chatter, or stop by Twitter and find us at Global Chat Pod. If you have a question, want to subscribe to the newsletter, or are interested in sponsoring, visit theglobalchatter.com.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.